Chapter 58. The Bargain. The Shalane stared out across the still, glassy lake. Compared to the days behind, the broiled fish and ragged lean-tos felt luxurious, even when a cold winter squall blasted in off the lake and lashed the wooden wall while they squatted shuddering around a weak fire on the lee side. Padre Ethan promised rescue would arrive in a few days, though he fretted over how the recently constructed watercraft would fare in the brief but violent storm. At last the conversation of their bedraggled group turned hopeful, full of home, familiar places, and beloved people. The Shalane had long since abandoned any hope of spotting Jen before returning to Rugoth, and she turned her attentions to praying for his safe return. As much as she wanted to see him, she hoped that he would forsake her and hide to save his own life. Her mind resolved to see her divine task done, for only its completion would bring to fruition the pleasant future scenes that occupied her thoughts. Her mother persisted in as gloomy a state as the Shalane could ever remember seeing her in. After nearly dying at Three Willows Inn, Mirelle had been fearful and even vulnerable, but after her visit with Jen 2 nights before, an abiding hopelessness held her captive. While perhaps a trick of months of hard travel, the former first mother had aged, her empty eyes only doubling the effect of its appearance. The Shalane guessed her pain. The last few weeks had stripped one of the most powerful figures on Kihol of her title, her throne, and her love, and while the Shalane knew her mother yet had plans and work she wanted done, these provided no fire in her heart or animation to her features. Not even the barges emerging from the mist in the late afternoon and the arrival of fresh food and warm blankets could jar Mirelle from her stupor. Only the arrival of Ethrys, Captain Tolbrook, and Shadan Cairn a few minutes later stirred her from her shelter. And before Ethan could trap the mage, Mirelle had corralled him into a private area behind the wall to explain everything. The Shalane noted the Shadan's questioning glances as he scanned the beach for his pupil. To the Shalane's surprise, Torbrand ignored his own son and Ethan and approached her, executing an uncharacteristic bow while Captain Tolbrook, Jaren, and Dayson watched.
"Forgive my lack of niceties, Lady Cairn, but has Jen been killed?"
"No, Shadan," the Shalane answered. "It is rather more complicated than that."
At first, the Shalane hesitated, wondering what and how much to tell him, but in the end decided that the unpredictable man was an ally where Jen was concerned. She told him of her former protector's attack on Shatan, his entrapment, and his eventual rescuing of their party and disappearance. Torbrand grinned as she finished.
"Thank you for your report, Highness," he smiled. "So he is a fugitive for trying to kill that fool's son of mine. Running from Shatan certainly sounds more appealing than running with him at the moment, so perhaps I shall try to kill him myself later on. Don't worry too much for Jen, he is a clever one. Good day, Highness. Oh, and since Shatan is now High King, I am no longer Shadan. You may address me as Warlord now, or General, if you prefer."
"I will," she replied. "Thank you, General."
Mirelle and Ethrys returned some time later, Ethrys clearly shaken. He threw a weak smile her way before walking over to consult with Ethan. Her mother sat beside her and quizzed her about Torbrand's visit.
"He is a strange ally," Mirelle said, "but we will take him."
The Shalane leaned into her, wishing she could infuse her mother's heart with some liveliness or hope.
"How did Ethrys and Torbrand Cairn escape the battle?"
Mirelle indicated the Shalane should follow her along the shore of the lake.
"After felling the giant at Dunnock Falls, Ethrys had completely exhausted himself. Captain Tolbrook hid himself and the mage within the creature's mangled armour throughout the night and the next day, until the army had moved on in pursuit of the main party. Torbrand and the Ogmerians held the road against the Uyumark for nearly an hour until he and about 20 of his men fled into the hills. The Uyumark pursued them and killed all but Torbrand and 4 others. The night provided enough cover for them to evade the rest. Ethrys met up with them as they searched for any of the scattered mounts that might have survived. Fortunately, 3 of the animals still lived. Knowing the way to Eldaluri Mora would be unattainable with their small numbers, they resolved on returning immediately to the portal gate to summon reinforcements. They rode hard to the beach landing. A few days from the lake, they found an army of Uyumark marching in the same direction just ahead of them, apparently dispatched to secure the fortifications. They obviously succeeded, but not before Ethrys, owing to his craft, overtook and passed the marchers, galloping the last 2 miles at great peril. They secured a raft just as the Uyumak fell in fury upon the wall. Ethrys and Torbrand nearly worked the rowers to death, so you can imagine the disappointment to their urgency when they found that only an honour guard had been stationed at the portal, the main body of soldiers quartered some miles away. But even worse, the lack of barges precluded shuttling any great numbers across the lake anyway. In the interim, Ethrys and the Shaddan returned to the Shard beachhead to learn the outcome of the battle, finding what we found a few days ago, an unapproachable beachhead swarming with Uyumak archers that could cut them down before they rode within 50 yards of the shore. They returned to oversee preparations and to plan. I certainly wouldn't have wanted to trade places with any of the craftsmen set to constructing more barges. I'm sure Ethrys and Torbrand were rather intense with their supervision. Of course, the Church of the One disgorged every member of its fighting orders and sent them to the gate, levelling all manner of accusations of incompetency at Rugoth, just as they did after the attack at the betrothal. "Considering recent events," the Shalane said, "they certainly have a case. We were too arrogant." "True. We did not feel our danger then as we should have, or perhaps failed to perceive its nature." "I am sorry about Jen, Mother," the Shalane continued in a low voice after a brief pause. "I do not know what he told you, but it has apparently destroyed you." Mirel smiled bitterly. "You know, while I always loved him, I had intended him for you once Shatan met his fate, which, by my calculations, will be several seconds into his encounter with Mikik. Somewhere I lost sight of the altruistic blessing for my daughter and thought of myself instead. I nearly fell apart when he announced his ridiculous betrothal to Fenna." Here she sighed and lifted her eyes to the lake. "It is no matter to you, dear. At least you have his love. I think I could have won it, too, if he could have mastered his apparent fear of me." "You were brutally forward." Mirel smiled again, eyes softening. "That I was. You can only imagine how vexing it is to find that you can easily procure any man in the world except the one you want. Do you think I appeared a bit desperate? I was aiming for playful and passionate." "Desperate? Hardly. Playful, yes, and to him probably not serious, until you declared it with a rather frank kiss, which, from his reticence to talk about it, I infer that he enjoyed immensely. I've been meaning to ask you what occasioned him to tell you about that." "I don't recall," the Shalane lied, not wanting to recount the particulars of that conversation with anyone. "I enjoyed that kiss as well, so please don't begrudge me a few weeks of sullen misery. In any case, do not worry over much for me. If any of us survive the next year, then I am sure I can find just as miserable a mate as you, and we can invite Jen over for tea and take turns at discomforting our husbands by flirting wildly with him. Jen and Shatan drinking tea together. Eldaloth will truly have transformed the world if that meeting ever takes place." Their conversation ended after Padre Athan goaded Shatan into a leadership role that consisted of telling everyone to embark for immediate departure. The Shalane swatted the sand off of her tattered dress. "I must attend to my husband. It is time to pretend again." The oarsmen knelt as Shatan perfunctorily extended his hand and guided her onto the barge. Athan and Torbrand boarded next, followed by Ethrys, Jaren, Mirel, and Cadean. "And so you thought of everything but clothes, then?" Athan complained to Torbrand.
"Believe it or not, your grace," Torbrand said, "there are clothes for you all awaiting on the other side of the portal. You can thank Padre Nolan for that kindness. In our hasty departure, we neglected to load them. We forgot the toilet buckets, too, so you will have to settle for a leather sack or the lake. Mikik's beard, but we forgot the dancing women and the kegs of wine, too. I hope you can struggle by without them for a few more days."
"That's enough, Torbrand," Athan growled.
2 days of knocking elbows and stepping on feet while they slipped across the foggy lake on cramped barges failed to ameliorate anyone's mood. During the slow journey, Ethrys used his magic to confirm the Shalane's pregnancy. To hear Ethrys say it somehow surprised her, despite the sour stomach she had felt for weeks. A life not her own thrived within her, and before another year passed she would bear the title of Mother. With all that had attended her conception and the anticipation of a glorious birth, she wondered at how it could all seem so unreal, and in her thoughts secondary to more pressing concerns. Their third night out, the floating dock resolved into view, and a great shout rose. A mass of cheering soldiers, torches and lanterns haloed in the dark, ushered the dishevelled party through the portal. At last, Rugothian soil greeted their weary feet. The afternoon sky, every bit as dank and grey as the lakes had been, provided nothing of cheer for the Shalane despite the jubilation of the people, mostly soldiers, who rejoiced at their narrow escape from danger and ruin. The boots of thousands of men had churned the snow into mud, turning the frozen ground around the smoky bonfires into slippery quagmires. Aethon eagerly jumped at every opportunity to herald the story of Shertan's usage of magic to slay the Uyumak that had threatened them in the mountains, promising that this was only one of many noble deeds to be told in the days ahead. While the Shalane could understand the need to bolster the people's confidence in their new king, she wondered just how many lies a churchman could tell in good conscience to accomplish the task. No doubt by the time they arrived in Mikmir, Shertan's single dead foe would multiply fivefold. Wickedly, she thought she might just coax her own creativity out of hiding, to fabricate some stories of her own bravery for everyone to believe, but decided she would just leave it to Aethon, who appeared to have some skill in such things. Dacen, Jaren, Cadean, and her mother all kept close by her, and from her mother's biting of her lower lip, the Shalane divined that the same crisis that filled her mind filled her mother's. Already, several of the leaders and generals had posed questions about Jen's fate, and for some reason, Aethon declined to comment. He and Padre Nolan gravitated from one brief meeting to the next, heads low and together, perhaps arriving at some consensus as to how to handle the situation. Jeff appeared nervous as he performed a song for the revelers, Fenner behind him with her hands on his shoulders. Maywen had disappeared almost as soon as she had crossed through the portal. Most disturbing, however, was the continual presence of the Elderfair, the emasculated soldiers of the church who anciently had seen to the protection of the Shalane before an indiscretion with a tenth Shalane had thrown them into disgrace and out of the castle. They followed the new queen's party wherever it moved, sable cloaks swirling around tall, thin frames in the light wind. Their dark clothing contrasted with pale faces, haughty eyes regarding all with disdain, especially the retinue of Rugothian soldiers that surrounded what was left of the Dark Guard. Of course, all now wore the colours of King Shertan, a red field with a golden hawk clutching a fully waxed triss in its talons. Shertan had barely set one foot through the portal before Aethon had shepherded him off to clad his charge in the kingly garb, though it hung loosely about the wearer. The royal tailor had stitched the clothing based on measurements taken before Shertan had suffered weeks of privation, though as for that, the thinner features and weathered face aided the new king's appearance, subtracting some of the spoiled, soft aspect of his demeanour that had presented itself so plainly on first acquaintance. The Shalane even thought he could pass for handsome, should the trend continue, but from the way he thrust his fingers into every passing platter stacked with meat and bread, she thought his shirts would find themselves inflated with his girth soon enough. Her own stomach could not chance anything as heavy as what was served. Whether from anxiety about Jen or the recurring nausea from her pregnancy, she felt she could take nothing more than the mulled cider she clutched in cold hands. As yet, no one had indicated she should wear anything other than the ragged black dress she had donned after tumbling with Jen over the falls, and the memory of those pleasant days served to distract her until a grave Padre Aethon started toward her and her mother. Aethon said, "Your ladyship, Mirel, I would ask for a word with you apart from the camp. I have a tent set up in a little clearing away from here so that we can talk with some privacy. You may bring whatever retinue you wish, but I would ask that we speak alone in the tent." "We are not inclined to speak with you at the moment, Padre. No disrespect intended, of course," Mirel answered. "It concerns a certain common acquaintance of ours. I think you know the one I mean. There are questions about him that must be answered, and I thought I would extend you the courtesy of providing some of what must be said before I bring it to light in a more public arena." "Lead on, then," Mirel agreed, face severe. The Shalane took her hand, wishing to give strength while seeking it herself. Aethon led them away at a brisk pace, several of the Elderfair flanking him. Nearly 15 soldiers accompanied the Queen and her retinue down a rutted track of frozen mud that led much farther into the woods than the Shalane had envisioned when Aethon described it. After they had covered at least a half a mile, a bright circular tent glowing with an orange light beckoned to them in the darkening evening. As they approached, several things caught the Shalane's eye, A bald, plump man in a bloody apron stood to the side of the tent, pounding nails into a small oblong box, and as they came nearer he seemed shifty and nervous, increasing the rhythm of the hammer strokes. Two large sacks sat on the ground nearby, each guarded by a pair of elderfair. As they approached, the Shalane thought she saw something move inside one of the sacks, and her heart started to pound as a horrible idea took root in her mind.
"I told you to have this mess out of here an hour ago, Captain!"
Aethon yelled grumpily at an elderfair who stood at the door.
"Apologies, Your Grace," he said smoothly, bowing. "We will return for the other after full dark."
The party stopped as the man with a hammer hoisted the box onto his shoulder, and the soldiers lifted the ungainly sacks, revealing for a certainty that people were inside. The Shalane swallowed hard and stared at the tent, trying to get a peek inside the tent flap.
"Now," Aethon said, "if you would leave your soldiers here and come with me inside, I have a brazier there and we can talk comfortably."
Cadean, Jaren, and Dacen protested nervously, but Mirel, face drawn, waved them back wordlessly. Together, the Shalane and Mirel followed Aethon through the tent door, the Shalane trying to control her trembling. The scene outside prepared her enough not to cry out. A table in the centre of the tent supported an unconscious Wan Jen, left leg amputated at the knee. Blood covered the floor and pooled around the cauterized stump. Mirel released her hand. Aethon turned toward them, and a livid Mirel slapped him so hard that his eyes watered and he staggered. Without warning, she flew at him in a rage, raining down blows upon him. She did not cry out as she waded into the stunned churchman, tears and hair flying with fists in a primal fury. The Shalane, tears of her own running down her cheeks, used the distraction to cross to Jen, eyes drinking in his face as she placed her hand on his forehead. He sucked in a deep breath at her touch, his colour returning. Inch by inch, the leg beneath his knee regrew, all the way down to his toes, until Jen was whole again. The black dot marking his prophetic identity darkened on the reformed instep. She marvelled how such a difficult healing cost her nothing, as she quickly replaced Jen's boot lying nearby to cover the mark, wondering why he hadn't wakened. When she turned back to the scuffle, Aethon and her mother had come to their feet, each with a hand to the other's throat. Aethon bled from his nose, a mass of scratches lining his face.
"Mirel!" Aethon gagged. "Calm yourself and listen to me if you want him to live!"
Cadean burst through the door, sword drawn, followed by Dacen and Jaren. Cadean took one look at Aethon and charged. Aethon's eyes widened and he incanted, Cadean falling limp to the floor. At his collapse, Mirel relented and released her grip on the Padre. The Shalane ordered her protectors to stand down, drag Cadean out of the tent and leave them alone. Mirel sat down hard on the floor and wept. The Shalane knelt by her mother and comforted her as Aethon wiped his face and calmed his overwhelmed elderfair guards outside the tent. By the time he returned, Mirel had stood, reaffixing her hair as best she could. The Shalane crossed to Aethon and healed his wounds while her mother composed herself. The Shalane felt angry, mind running through every scheme it could of how to free her beloved protector, while every idea seemed sensible of its own futility. She focused on her mother, whose heart, like her own long ago, had finally broken.
"I will not apologize, Aethon, if that's what you're waiting for," Mirel finally said. "Say what you are going to say and be done with it."
"As you wish," he returned acerbically. "As you can see, I have apprehended the Ilk and his companions. I have had his leg amputated.
And you have healed it. Well, no matter. It will be nice to have a spare in case the other one is misplaced. As you may have guessed, I intend to tell the world that Jen is the Ilk and that he attacked the Ha'ulric after the marriage ceremony."
The Shalane noted that her mother seemed unaffected by the revelation of Jen's identity, and both Mirel and Aethon stared at the Shalane as if expecting some reaction from her. Mirel spoke first.
"You knew?"
"Yes."
But how? When?"
Aethon stammered.
"When we travelled alone in the canyon, the Milim Eri, who turned him from his destiny, found us, and revealed to me who he was, and presented me with the opportunity to kill him if I would. My choice is obvious. I love him, and would never let him come to harm if it were in my power to stop it."
Aethon paced about the room, thunderstruck, requiring several minutes to collect himself.
The Shalane took the opportunity to ask her mother about when she knew. Surprised to find how early her mother and Aethrys had come to trust Jen, despite the fate the prophecy declared for him. Aethon at length righted himself and sat in a chair near the table where Jen lay.
I am shocked. Shocked that Jen managed to win both your confidences independently of each other truly manifests the cleverness of Mikik's creature.
You will never convince anyone that Jen is the Ilk, the Shalane said confidently. This seemed to spark Aethon from his wonderment.
Oh, yes, I will, he glared. And you will help me.
Mirel laughed bitterly. What could you possibly hold over our heads to induce us to hurt a man we both love?
I will hold the man himself, Aethon returned. I have a bargain to strike with you. I will not kill the Ilk, but hold him away secretly in Muir Eldaloth. We will tell the people that he attacked Shatan in the throne room and escaped, which is true, and was witnessed by many. You will agree to say that as the Ilk tried to return to Rugoth, Shatan confronted and killed him using Triss magic. We will present his leg and prophetically marked foot as evidence. If you do not agree to publish this version of events, I will have the Ilk executed immediately.
You are a liar, Aethon, Mirel said, shaking her head, and a pathetic one. If you think for a moment that I believe you will let Jen live, regardless of what we promise or do not, then you must consider me a fool.
Unfortunately, Mirel, I don't have the time or the inclination to prove to you the good faith of my proposal. Take my offer, or he dies. That is all. You rule nothing any more, and have no power now but to save his life or to let it fall.
But I do, the Shalane asserted to the startled Aethon, who turned toward her, face concerned.
You are the queen, but I'm afraid that in matters of—
You mistake me, Padre. I hoped, rather than expected, my position to lend me any real influence in the world. What I speak of is my ability to guarantee your promise. I will know it when Jen dies. I am linked to him in a way you have no power to obscure or hinder. The instant he dies, I will feel it. If that happens, whether by your doing or the doing of another, I will use whatever influence I have at my command to destroy you, Shatan, and this little charade you want to foist upon Kehol. For the sake of the world, I will play Lady Cairn and the obedient wife. I will carry this child and try to help Shatan rally the world to defend it. But neither my mother nor I will speak one word against Jen. Ever. If we are forced to speak on the subject, then you will regret it.
I cannot believe that you would sabotage the prophecy and endanger the world no matter what you feel about him.
Then you suppose wrongly, she returned evenly. A strange calm had enveloped her, the way forward coming clear in her mind. To be sure, I want to do my part to save Kehol, but I will not act against my conscience or my heart any more than I already have in order to do so. When this world is whole again, I want the people I love to be left in it. I want Jen left in it. If you upset that plan, I will certainly have no care for upsetting yours.
Aethon stared at her, eyes searching and mind racing.
Ah, yes, Mirel stepped in, clarity dawning on her face.
You are thinking that perhaps you can kill Jen now and secrete us in some location for our safety to minimize the damage we can do. A bold plan, and it might work if it weren't for that one person you know who is wholly loyal to me and powerful enough to smash you in an instant. And if he suspects you are maltreating us, he will see us rescued from your grasp. We understand the need for my daughter to support Shatan and to be seen in concert with her husband for the morale of the people, but trust me when I say that neither of us will have any qualms about abandoning the king forever if you cross us. And in case you are in doubt, I have more friends than Aethrys who are quite willing to do my bidding, whether I sit on a throne or not.
The choice, I hope, is clear, Padre, the Shalane continued, confidence building. Keep Jen alive and well, and we will parade around with King Shatan and help him build his army. Kill or hurt Jen, and we will part ways and let the drama unfold as it may. Too many people witnessed Jen's attempt to kill Shatan for us to deny it, but we will not assert that he is the Ilk, nor will we be party to telling the lie that Shatan somehow felled him, which is so outrageous that I couldn't say it without laughing out loud. Those are the conditions. Are we in agreement?
Aethon's tongue seemed tacked to the top of his mouth, and the Shalane continued. Well, no matter. No verbal acceptance is required. Things are as I have stated them. How you choose to act will be the hand that pens the history of Kihol. To irritate Aethon as much to express their fondness, the women each anointed Jen's brow with a kiss before leaving the tent into the bitter night. The Shalane wondered how much Dacen, Jarin, and Cadean had heard of the exchange, all of them wearing troubled expressions as they marched behind their charges. Mirel put her arm around her daughter and pulled her close, and whispered, "I am proud of you. I do not think I've ever seen you exhibit such open courage. It was quite a gambit to try to convince Aethon that you could sense Jen's death. I hope he really believes it. It is true, whether he believes it or not. I will carry out my promise if Aethon kills him, and Kihol can curse me if it will. I know I must seem terribly selfish. Perhaps, dear, but you will hardly find any objections from me. Even so, I must remind you now of your resolution to play your part, and let me deal with the nasty particulars of keeping Jen alive and attending to other unpleasant matters. I will not consult with you or report to you so that you cannot be impeached or interrogated. You will have the harder task. It is time for you to be a wife and stand with your husband, whatever mortification it may cost you. Bend a little, dissemble when you must, but keep hope alive." The Shalane nodded in agreement and said no more as they traversed the lonely track back to the main encampment. The celebration rose as night fell, bonfires blazing and casting wild shadows in the wood as soldiers clapped and danced to the lively rhythms and songs of minstrels. In the Shalane's present mood, it all smelled unpleasantly of sweaty men, smoke, and ale. As she passed, the revellers' toasts were raised in her honour. Her mother goaded her into offering a weak response to the celebrants honouring her. When they caught sight of Shatan dancing near a fire, surrounded by nobility, Mirel left her daughter to attend to urgent matters, disappearing into the night. The Shalane braced herself and strode into the circle of churchmen and dignitaries who were allowed the privilege of company with the Ha'ulric. She noted that several regents were there, along with warlords from Ogmir and dukes from Tolnor. Torbrand mingled with his warlords. Disappointingly, though not unexpectedly, Shatan had wasted no time wading into a nearby cask of ale, and by the red on his nose and cheeks, the underside of his ample mug had seen more of the stars than the mud. Jeff awaited his lord's pleasure nearby, while Fenna, happy and contented, sat nursing a mug of her own on her lap. All save Shatan bowed as the Shalane crossed to her husband. He rose and grabbed her in a wild embrace.
"Minstrel," he shouted, "a song for the lady and me. It is time for dancing."
For the second time in her life, the Shalane danced with Shatan. Only this time her heart was so heavy that what resulted was little more than a lugubrious shifting about. Fortunately, Shatan, who could not be parted from his ale even in dance, cavorted so wildly that he slipped and landed on his backside, ejecting the ale to run down a Dur churchman's cloak. The company laughed at his antics, and the Shalane took the opportunity to perform her best impression of concern for his well-being. "Have you hurt yourself, my lord?" she asked, crouching near him and grabbing his arm to help him to his feet. "Shall I fetch a pure man?"
"Not unless he has a mug of ale in his hand,"
Shatan laughed hysterically at his own joke and handed the Shalane his mug.
"Go see if you can find him."
Jarin hissed under his breath, and the Shalane cast him a warning glance. If anything, retrieving ale exempted her from further dancing, which Shatan now undertook alone. Fenna met her by the cask.
"It is so good to be home," she brimmed excitedly. "I feel so much better now. The past few months seem like such a dark dream. Padre Aethon said that Jeff and I are to ride to Blackshire come morning. I would like to have remained with you, but he said that you would be well taken care of."
"Padre Aethon spoke with you and Jeff?"
"Yes, when he came for the book, Jeff wrote. Jeff tried to convince the Padre to let him finish a few more things, but Aethon was so insistent that Jeff gave way. I suppose it won't matter much anyway. Have you heard anything about Jen?"
"Nothing new, I'm afraid," the Shalane replied, topping off the mug. "If I hear anything definite, I will write to you." The Shalane looked into the green eyes of her former handmaiden and felt tears coming to her own. As much of a trial that the young woman had proved to be in the preceding weeks, the Shalane loved her dearly. Setting her husband's drink aside, she embraced Fenna for many long moments, thanking her for her years of devoted service.
"It was an honour to serve you, Shalane,"
Fenner said in kind, wiping tears of her own. Promise to write and to visit me whenever you can.
I will.
Chatan's impatience ended their discussion.
Have you found that pure man yet, Lady Cairn? It turns out I need a bit more medicine after all.
After another quick embrace, the Shalane returned the mug to its owner, who drank deeply and with satisfaction.
Well done, my dear. I believe I shall keep you around a while longer.
Athan, face guarded, approached the assembly, and all mirth ceased. Chatan returned to sit on an ample stump that served as a makeshift throne in the sylvan environs. The Shalane followed and sat by him on the ground, wondering how long it would take Jaren's teeth to dissolve to powder from such frequent grinding. Athan shushed what little conversation persisted in their immediate party, though the raucous festivities continued unabated all around them.
With Chatan's permission, I would like to address several questions I am sure you all have had since our return. Firstly, the Shalane is pregnant with a holy child. She has lain with Chatan but once after the moon tryst broke into the sky. Thus we can confirm that the child was conceived according to the dictates of prophecy. Secondly, as some of you have no doubt heard, Jen attacked the Howlrick on the night of his wedding. I can confirm to you now that Jen is, indeed, the very ilk.
Gasps ran through the assembly, and Athan paused a moment to let the news sink in.
Chatan killed him as he tried to sneak back into Rugoth, and we will, starting tomorrow, show the mark of prophecy upon his severed foot as proof that the designs of Mikik have been frustrated.
The Shalane grasped the anemone within her dress, comforted by its warmth.
That's preposterous, Athan! Even for you!
Torbrand spoke up. While shock at this affront rippled among the dignitaries, Torbrand continued.
It is simply irrational, even for one as irrational as me. If the Ilk's purpose was to thwart the prophecy, he could have ordered Jen to kill the Shalane and Chatan months ago. And while it is true that he attacked Chatan, it was after Chatan and the Shalane had conceived the child, and after my brilliant son stripped Jen of rank and title and gave the woman he was to marry to another man. If Jen were under Mikik's orders, why would he have not killed Chatan and the Shalane outright, and why would he have waited until after they had conceived the child? It is ridiculous.
While the Shalane could not understand Torbrand's strange affection for Jen, she could only smile as his logic set tongues to murmuring and heads to nodding in assent. Chatan even set his ale down for a moment.
I cannot explain what Mikik's plans might be, but even the Shalane knows it to be true, don't you? Why don't you tell them how you were deceived?
The Shalane saw the challenge in Ethan's eyes, defying her to keep to her word.
So you think the weak little Shalane will not go through with her blustery words? You asked for this, Athan. Remember it.
The Shalane rose to her feet and with the most believable conviction she had ever thrown behind any lie, said,
On the contrary, Jen is the most genuine person I have ever met. He attacked Lord Cairn because he had affronted Jen's good character beyond toleration, and Jen was honour-bound to confront him to defend his good name. I would no more believe that Jen is the ilk than I would believe that you are. Everyone here is well aware of Jen's unimpeachable moral character. It is a shame that you should foist such a dreadful slander on one who has done so much to aid the prophecy. Why, I doubt there is anyone alive that has helped it along more than he.
The Shalane thought Athan endured her tirade admirably, despite the fact that her argument had clearly put the majority against him.
Then I offer this as proof, he said,
signalling to a group of elder fair who brought forth the box the Shalane had noticed outside of Athan's tent. The group contracted around the box as the church soldiers pried the lid open. There, on a mat of straw, lay Jen's freshly amputated leg, the mark of prophecy plain upon its instep.
Will you deny, Shalane, that this is the leg of your protector?
Athan prompted.
I cannot say. I have never seen his naked leg. And the last time I saw my protector, he had both of his.
Because you healed what he had done!
How could I have done that? You said he was dead. I cannot restore limbs to the dead. Besides, if I had seen Jen dead, I would be in my tent mourning, not celebrating here. I believe you have the wrong man.
You may have captured and killed the ilk, but it was not Jen. I doubt he'll ask my opinion again.
Aethon ordered the box away, the Shalane noticing the slight trembling of his hands as he addressed an unconvinced audience.
It is Jen, the very one. Before he died, the Pontiff Belliamus examined Jen personally and found it to be so. I will not contradict him. I certify that the leg you have just seen is Jen's.
And what has the Ha'orik to say?
Said Eulodian Mael, an imposing warlord of Ogmir.
His word is law, and I will follow.
Shertan wrinkled his nose when he realized someone had addressed him specifically. He set his mug down and stood, hitching up his loose pants.
I, Shertan Cairn, Lord of Keir Hall, declare Jen to be the very vermin ilk just as Aethon has shown you. He set his foot against me from the beginning, and tried to end my life, which no one save those affiliated with evil would undertake. He deceived the Shalane, and she is yet confounded by that deception.
I beg your pardon, my lord, the Shalane interrupted, but I am in my right mind and suffer under no spell.
Do not contradict me,
Shertan growled, shoving her to the ground. The Shalane landed hard, turning to see what Jaren would do, and finding him arm extended and sword rammed through the left side of Shertan's upper chest. No one moved, gaping in shocked disbelief as Shertan crumpled and slid off the bloody blade. The thud of his body hitting the ground thawed frozen tongues and feet. Jaren dropped his blade and raised his hands as Shertan's guard and the Elderfair closed upon him. Aethon sprung to Shatan's side immediately, taking time only to yell for Jaren to be left alive. The Shalane stared in wonder and sadness at her protector, who regarded her softly and with resignation.
I cannot live and see you treated like this, Highness. Not for the world. Jen is right. He was always right.
Shalane! Aethon screamed frantically. Help him!
The Shalane picked herself up and wormed her way through the group of men clustered around their king. He lay on the ground, unblinking and pale. Trembling, she grasped the limp hand and concentrated.
I cannot help him, she reported to a sea of expectant faces. I cannot raise the dead.